In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
You betcha. Time to talk movies. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joins us like he does every Monday afternoon. Hello there, Al.
Hey, how's it going, man?
I'm happy to be in the air-conditioned comfort of the Zone Radio Studios. Thank you.
Man, isn't it brutal out there?
It's, yeah. Yeah, I pledge to not complain about it in this hour, right. But, you know, I'll do my best. But, yes, it's warmer than we're accustomed to.
It is extremely warm. It is very, very warm. This is not a complaint, just an acknowledgement of how incredibly warm it is.
I saw this. I think it was our friend Ryan Breton from News Center who I had not heard of doing this before. But he said, take the back of your hand and put it on the pavement. And if it's too hot for you, then don't let your pooches out there, because that's what it feels like on the pads of their little paws. This is not a good time to be a dog.
Oh, yeah. No, I'd never heard that particular tidbit. But I know, you know, I'm sure you're the same way. Like, we always try to be very conscious of Stella's little tootsies.
Yeah.
When we're out and about. Just because, again, like, it's, you know, they don't have shoes on. Like, that's got to be tough on their little feet. So yeah, during these sorts of stretches, we tend to shoot for early in the day or later in the evening for our little sojourns. And if we go out in the afternoon, it's usually just to the backyard or for like a quick spin across the various esplanades of the Tree Street neighborhood.
And I suspect you're like me in that, you know, you're setting up fans and you're asking Stella, are you comfortable? Is this good? Does this feel better?
Oh my God. Yeah. There's a fan in every room. And, you know, it's, you know, you go downstairs and Stella is parked in front of one fan. And then you go upstairs and then Scooby is parked in the other fan, in front of the other fan. And then when we turn the air conditioner on in the bedroom, like, you try to shut the door so it keeps the cool in, so it cools down for you to sleep at night. But you go upstairs and it's inevitably been poked open by one or both of the various critters as they sprawl in air-conditioned glory atop our bed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I know that feeling. Definitely. Well, good. Well, hope you all keep cool here for the next couple of days, and then you'll need a sweater by the end of the week because it's Maine.
I was just looking at the extended forecast, and it's like, oh, sure, this makes sense.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what about movies? How many did you get a chance to see?
You know, I only got to see two this past weekend. It's funny because this is usually a pretty robust sort of weekend for the movies. But for whatever reason, I feel like there's a sort of fits and starts quality to the sort of reopening of movie theaters and people figuring out their release dates and all that stuff. I think it's really going to start ramping up over the next couple of weeks, even this weekend, starting with stuff like, you know, In the Heights coming out and all that. And it's really going to, we're going to really sort of slide into a really kind of an extended stretch of blockbusters. But we're not quite there yet. So we've only got a couple this week. I'll start with it's a little movie called Introducing Jodea. You know me. I've never been shy about really going after a movie that's not good. Like, that's I'm not afraid to do that. However, I do think it's important to maintain a certain amount of perspective with regards to how said movie came to be. Like, if it's a studio production that cost $100 million and it's terrible, like, I'm going to have no problem just gleefully tearing it apart. But if you've got something that's like a micro-budget indie or something that's clearly a passion project by those involved, like, I'm going to be considerably more forgiving. And that's the kind of movie that Introducing Jodea is. It's, I don't know, I guess you could call it like a riff on like Pygmalion, like that sort of, you know, that time-honored tradition of Hollywood basically remaking that story over and over again, whether it's My Fair Lady or Pretty Woman or what have you. And it's a very low budget film that I just happened to, I was invited to view a screener and I checked it out. Look, it's not a great movie. I'm certainly going to give people credit for doing what they could with what they had. Basically, here's the gist. So you've got Jodea, played by Chloe Trakos, who also was responsible for the story. She's an aspiring actress, but has been aspiring for like 10 years at this point. No big break in sight. She lives in a camper in the driveway of her landlord, who's a weird British guy named Harold. Her car is a beater with doors that don't open, and she works as a waitress at a takeout place while she's trying to get her foot in the door doing, like, PA work. And it's not going well. Meanwhile, we have the disgraced director, Zach Kowalski, played by Jeff Thomas Coppin, who's trying to make a comeback after he did a stint in rehab. He's got a new film in production that stars his famous actress wife, Isabella, played by Yadira Orozco, and it's supposed to mark his triumphant return. But his arrogance and general unhappiness can't help but infect the process. Now, Jodea is working on the set of this film when one of her mistakes leads to an unfortunate incident involving Isabella. She gets fired, escorted off the set, and is left to bemoan yet another missed opportunity. However, opportunity knocks again, quite hard actually, when an inattentive Zach actually rear-ends Jodea in her car. He tries to avoid the insurance companies, writes her a check, but he gets his name wrong, and she overhears a conversation between the director and his agent, Grant, played by Kent Hatch, about the issues with the film, and so she offers up this compromise. Instead of paying her off, Zach should put her in the movie. This leads to a bet between Zach and Grant. If he can get a good performance out of Jodea within a week, Grant will use his pull to get a major movie star for the film. And we're off. Look, you could probably guess pretty much how this all plays out. Look, it's an obviously aspirational movie, both in terms of subject matter and the making of it. That's a good thing. Like, any artist worth anything is going to keep reaching rather than resting. But the reality is this movie's reach definitely exceeds its grasp. You know, there are some underlying themes at work here that are kind of compelling, like adding the sort of who-you-know aspect of Hollywood success to a story like this, you know, gives that standard, you know, actress who will do anything for a part trope kind of a little twist. you know, and you can argue that cinematic history is filled with reflections of this kind of story, like the idea of a big deal director or executive like plucking someone from obscurity and turning them into a star. You know, like the Lana Turner soda fountain discovery story that is probably not true, but has become incredibly celebrated through, you know, through Hollywood history. But the truth is, it's just, they don't quite manage to execute cleanly. Like, it's the sort of low-budget movie where you can kind of see the seams. The reality is, when you're supposed to be showing us the filming of a big-budget extravaganza, like, seeing those seams, it provides a disconnect that is kind of hard to overcome. Like, again, like I said, an honest effort, but that stripped down production kind of undermines the effort. Look, I'm not like I said, this is not a great movie, but it's an honest effort. You know, there's a very blood, sweat, and tears energy to the thing that you can't help but admire. Like, so many people clearly invested themselves in making this movie as a labor of love. And look, is it always a successful effort? Not really. But I think the effort matters. In terms of movies like this, I believe it's better to try and fall short than not to try at all.
All right. There you go. What else did you see this weekend?
Well, the big one that I saw as I said, I have no problem going after a big budget bad movie.
Uh-oh.
The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. first of all, Rich, did you know there were 8 of these films?
8? Oh my god, no I didn't.
Well, because we've got The Conjuring 1, 2, and now 3, but we also have the 2 movies about the spooky doll, And then the one about La Llorona, which I never saw and don't really know what it's about. But yeah, there are all these sort of adjacent, like, there's an extended Conjuring cinematic universe out there that every time I think about it just leaves me shaking my head. it's just remarkable to me. Look, we've talked a number of times about the fluidity of the phrase based on a true story. You know, it's that phrase can mean a lot of different things depending on who is saying it to you. Whether you're talking about a meticulous recreation of well-documented events with some dramatic license, or a largely constructed fiction that borrows a couple of ostensibly true elements from a pre-existing story. But then you look at the Conjuring films, this being the latest installment. Ed and Lorraine Warren, who are supposedly the sort of real-life inspiration for these movies, are, you know, delusional at best and grifting charlatans at worst. Like, they are lying liars who lie. I think that's pretty well documented at this point. But the stories that they have certainly provide the baseline for the sorts of movies that apparently a lot of people like to see, because all of these movies make just a crap ton of money. This one is no exception, even though it did the simultaneous... it's a Warner Brothers joint, so it did the simultaneous release in theaters and on HBO Max. Look, it's just like any other franchise. Like, the law of diminishing returns is in play. You know, it's got some solid performances, a couple of decent jump scares, but the truth is, like, this new one, it doesn't reach the level of certainly not the first one, which is actually quite a good movie.
Yes.
Or even the second one, which is less good, but still okay. But we're really starting to spiral downward at a pretty accelerated rate. So this story takes place in 1981. When we start, we have Ed and Lorraine Warren, played by Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, respectively, both of whom are, as always, excellent and easily the best part of this movie. They're participating in an exorcism. They're attempting to rid an 8-year-old boy named David Glatzel, played actually kind of wonderfully by a kid named Julian Hilliard, of the demonic presence that's possessing him. The kid's parents are there, as well as his sister Debbie, played by a young woman making her feature debut named Sarah Hook. And Sarah and Debbie's boyfriend, Arnie, played by Rory O'Connor. Things go awry. David starts to hurt people. Chaos ensues. And in the midst of all of that, that chaos, which, by the way, includes Ed suffering a pretty serious heart attack and David's dad getting stabbed in the leg, Arnie takes it upon himself to try and rectify the situation by inviting the demon inside David to take him instead. And clearly, young Arnie has never watched a horror movie, because that never goes well when you do that sort of thing.
No.
And you could guess it plays out about the way you think it will. It's not long before Arnie's situation starts to spiral, and the demon inside him drives him to commit a horrific act of violence, and he finds himself in prison, in shackles, awaiting a trial for a crime that, depending on your perspective, he didn't actually commit. So the Warrens begin investigating that situation in an effort to free Arnie and prove, for the first time ever in a courtroom, that it was, in fact, the devil that made him do it. Look, again, this movie bills itself as based on a true story, and technically that is true. Although the phrasing is even trickier than usual here because of the reputation of the real-life Ed and Lorraine Warren. Like, are they deluded dupes? Are they charlatans? I don't know. Who's to say? Look, is the film based on the true story as put forth by the Warrens? Yes. Is that story actually true? All signs point to no. But the veracity of the source material doesn't really have that much to do with the movie itself, at least in this case. Like, the relative truth or untruth of the account doesn't really matter. I mean, it's a movie. And it's a horror movie. Like, if it's effective as a film, the rest is kind of immaterial. Unfortunately, it really isn't. Like, look, there's something missing here. Like, there was a spark that made the first film, and to a slightly lesser extent the second, really work. Like, as portrayed on screen, the work done by the Warrens. It's spooky. It's terrifying. It's dangerous. It's charged with this sense of precariousness, this wonderful sort of dark balancing act with the Warrens standing at the fulcrum, preventing others from being trapped forever by evil. But you never really get that sense of balance in this one. And again, it's just lousy with kind of standard issue, like replacement level tropes. Like the exorcism and possession scenes, they're grisly, but grisly in the same way that we've been seeing them for decades now. Like all the subplots feel kind of rote, like they've been kind of copied from other and frankly better movies. There's just nothing about this one that feels new. Like even if you leave aside the fact that this is the third film in the series, and again, can't stress this enough, the eighth in the franchise overall, there's got to be room for something new, you know? And instead, it's all kind of retread and rehash, this churn of greatest hits type stuff that's less than the sum of its parts. I say all this, but it should be noted, absolutely none of the blame for this should be placed on the cast. Because honestly, the only reason this film works even as much as it does is because of what Patrick Wilson and especially Vera Farmiga are bringing to the table. Like, these guys, they're both incredibly talented. I don't think they've ever really received the credit for those talents, you know? I think they're both incredibly good at what they do. But I'm not going to argue against the idea of, the reality is, like, their presence in this franchise certainly helps their bottom lines, even if that doesn't necessarily burnish their critical reputations, you know what I mean? So, but even said, they treat the work with respect. Like, they bring this sort of, I refer to it as kind of a screwball adjacent energy to their coupling. Like, it's obviously not a screwball comedy, but that sort of, like, back and forth, like, dynamic is very present, and it works well in this context. It seems counterintuitive, but it really does. And their chemistry is enough to sort of hold the film's head above water as it thrashes through the sort of convoluted yet familiar beats. And the supporting cast is good too. I mean, not quite to the level of Wilson and Farmiga, but I mean, who is? Like, playing a possessed person in this kind of movie is always a weird and kind of complicated gig. But both the kid, Hilliard, and the older one, O'Connor, handle it pretty well. O'Connor specifically has this sort of general sort of wide-eyed amiability that kind of serves as a nice counterpoint to when things get really nuts. And they do absolutely get really nuts. The rest of the cast is excellent too. And there are a number of very good supporting turns that I can't go into specifically because, as you know, I make a habit of avoiding spoilers whenever possible, and just mentioning who these people are and what they're doing in the movie could constitute a spoiler. So just know there are a number of supporting turns that are very good along the way. This film falls short because of uninspired direction and a very messy script. Like I said, you expect a film series is going to gradually dip in quality, but this is more of a drop-off than you might anticipate. Again, it sort of maintains the standard The Conjuring ethos, but there's not any real resonance to it. So basically what you have is a mediocre extension of a cinematic universe that may have reached its sell-by date. I mean, there are flashes, but it just doesn't engage. Look, you can argue it's okay, but as far as the general, but as they say, Rich, the devil is in the details.
Alan Adams of The Main Edge. Appreciate it, Alan, as always. Hope you have a nice, cool evening there in the house and that you don't have to fight Stella and Scooby for space on the bed.
Yeah, right? Fingers crossed.
All right. Thanks, Al. See you Wednesday.
Yes, absolutely.
Alan Adams on Downtown.